RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Matt Robson is an Auckland barrister, former Minister of Disarmament and Arms Control, and Associate Foreign Minister under Helen Clark. He was in coalition as Alliance Party. He's also an advocate for global peace and justice. He's a regular speaker at disarmament and anti-nuclear conferences around the world. And he's been on RCR quite a few times now. And we thought we'd get Matt on to talk about increasing tension in the Pacific, the NATO summit, particularly to get an understanding of how China views what's going on. Matt, thanks for coming back on RCR. Nice to have you back again.
Pleasure to be here.
All right, I want to read these quotes from our Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, who chaired a meeting of the Indo-Pacific Four, the IP4 countries, Australia, Japan, Republic of Korea, and us. The IP4 met in the context of NATO's summit in Washington, D.C., hosted by President Biden, though maybe he doesn't have much of a memory of that. Who knows? Anyway, here are some of the quotes. Prosperity is only possible with security. We need to continue to work with our close partners to defend sovereignty, to protect our trade routes, to preserve the international order, and prevent tensions boiling into conflict. We're seeing territorial aggression in Europe for the first time since World War II, he said. Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine is in total defiance of international law, shaking the global economy and driving the cost of living crisis. IP4 leaders discussed the way North Korea's ballistic missiles and weapons are now being used by Russia to fight its war in Ukraine. Moscow and Pyongyang's behavior is escalating tensions in Europe and here in the Indo-Pacific. There's that term again. IP4 leaders issued a statement condemning North Korea's behavior. Matt, any of those quotes you want to respond to in no particular order, perhaps?
All of them, but I'll try and pick out the most important, which is to do with security and also his. He mentioned that the war in the Ukraine is the first war in Europe since the Second World War. Not true. He's forgotten Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
But let me just start with this. The first thing I'd like to say to all of New Zealand is that, of course, there are different views on this, but our parliament has not debated the shift to this new position. And the new position is that NATO have named China as the biggest threat in the world, followed closely by Russia. Now, that's the NATO foreign policy. NATO, of course, the greatest influence in NATO is the United States. That's not an allegation. That's not a rhetoric. That's a fact, the United States. And they make it known because they always pointing out they pay the greatest part of the bill. But if you tie yourself to the chariot, even a war chariot of another country, you're not doing your citizens a favor of looking at issues objectively in terms of your own interests and your own conclusion. So the first thing I'd say is that Mr. Luxon has said this and made it very clear to the United States, hey, we're not asking any questions. We've signed up to your agenda. And what is their agenda? There is no proof that China is setting out to have a war. When Hitler went to war in 1939, he signaled it well before. The intelligence agencies even got his timetable down to when the invasion of Russia would occur, which is what panicked Stalin, who then did an agreement with him because he couldn't get one with the West. I'm just saying it was well signaled. Plus, they said, we need living room. We want it in the East and we want some of your colonies. China, for all I know, yes, someone might say, yes, they're getting ready. But where is the proof? Either in their own statements or their capacity. So let's say they're going to threaten New Zealand's security. Let's have a look at that. Let's get the military in. How do they do it? Do they sail all the way to New Zealand? And presumably, even if the United States, we cut our links with being totally tied to them, but we're friendly, they might come along. Australia might sink them. There's just practical problems apart from the assumption that they are the problem. Now, the second thing is in terms of even the Ukraine war. Well, there's been no debate in the parliament with members of parliament taking into account and thinking through all of the different views on how this war has been going.
Yeah.
All we have had is rhetoric. And New Zealand, a long way away, has committed New Zealand's soldiers, money, training. They're actually, through the work we do, we kill Russians. Okay, they can say, well, they killed part of the Ukrainians, because you must remember, the Ukraine war has got a civil war aspect to it.
Yeah, no
Ukrainians
mention of that.
Fighting Ukrainians. So look, I don't think I've answered all of those questions, but I'm trying to raise for parliamentarians, because I do talk to a number, and I'm astounded by their ignorance. Whichever position they take, for instance, I have yet to come across one in terms of the Russian conflict that has read the Minsk agreements or thought about what triggered off the Russian concern, right or wrong, of having nuclear weapons and NATO on its border. Often people have been asked to think, what would the United States, well, we know what the United States would do. Cuba had nuclear weapons. It went into confrontation with Russia. Everybody thought the end had come. That's how they took it. They have a thing called the Monroe Doctrine, which says you will not come into our hemisphere. We run it. We know what they think. So there is no evidence that China has, and people can argue about the South China Sea and the islands that China claims or built, but they should think it actually is called the South China Sea. So China's got an interest in it. In the Pacific, Guam, Marshall Islands, Hawaii, if you like, to go back to 1898, they're islands that the Americans have taken. Shift over to the East Coast, Puerto Rico was taken in 1898, never given back. Bit like Taiwan, except it's not as powerful and as big, but similar. So historical analogies are important. It's not a matter of, you know, I think I've been accused of whataboutism. Whataboutism sometimes is about context and history. So I'll stop there because I've got on my hobby horse.
There's a couple of points here because it kind of feels like a bit of a gaslight from him. He's talking about the global economy being shaken and the Ukraine conflict or Russia and its actions in Ukraine driving the cost of living crisis. How do you get to that?
Well, only if you take the stupidity of, I can't think of any other country that would have done it, blowing up Nord Stream gas, but that's driven up the cost of living. Then the Russians didn't blow it up, presumably the United States. This is why Sweden won't hand out its investigation report now that it's tied into NATO and has to take its orders from another power, which is what I'm arguing, really, that New Zealand has to think. Why take orders from somebody else? Why dance to their tune? Now, back to the cost of living. The war is driving that. What about all the other factors caused by COVID, which most countries have pointed to? Supply chains broken, difficulties.
Printing money.
Multitude mm-hmm. of issues. I just saw a friend from France sent me a picture of a mock-up of President Putin speaking to his phone. We've stopped the trains. Let's now send the rain. Because you might have heard the French trains sabotage on different yep. parts of it. So obviously I thought it was very interesting. So it's the hysteria that, you know, that this is all caused by Russiagate, the Russians, whatever. Never would I say that they've got clean hands, but for goodness sake, interference in other countries, spying on other countries, cyber warfare is not the monopoly of Russia or China.
Does it feel like to you that we've, and that's the royal we've been lent on here by the US? We're being leaned on big time right now.
Oh, yes, from my experience as a minister, the United States Embassy was always in the ear of the government, so was the United Kingdom. And I'm not saying other countries didn't pay attention to us, but they were always in our ear. There are straight-out threats, as happened when we became nuclear-free, saying, well, that's the last you're going to hear from us. You're a friend but no longer an ally. And you'll get some other hard treatment. Okay. And then there's the soft touch. Well, look, you know, why don't you come along with us? We're your friend, blah, blah, blah. Whatever the whatever the blandishments, whatever the techniques, we need to get our own head in our own parliament and treat our public as mature and able to think through. But first of all, I just go back in all of this. Yes, we're now dancing clearly to the tune of the United States. It says proclaimed through NATO that China is enemy. And of course, even the government under Prime Minister Luxon has split personality on all of this because they've recognized that we have with China good relations, they say at times. Of course, very important economic relations, but not just economic relations, but you know, cultural. And we haven't actually ever had a war with China. We've never been in conflict. That doesn't mean we can't disagree, but it's a very, very dangerous. May I point to just one other thing, which I saw in the New Zealand Herald, a very esteemed newspaper. And that was, I almost choked on my toast. It was about 6:30 in the morning. And there were the picture of the Air Force of Spain, Italy, and France flying in formation in C-130s, which are troop carriers and munitions carriers and war carriers, over New Zealand. And there was much joking about them in the end saying, muchas gracias, you know, buenos dias, whatever they said. Not a question in the media.
Yeah, what are they doing here?
What are we doing with the Air Force of NATO country, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, flying over New Zealand? Is that because we agree that the Chinese are going to invade? Where was the discussion in Parliament? Or perhaps this week, I have asked some members of Parliament to raise this. When did we get to this stage? And for what reasons are we exercising with them? I know what will be said, security, security, security. But then you're talking about security. You need to put some facts up as to what is the security problem that we face, or people of the Pacific.
It's interesting what you say about the ignorance of parliamentarians, because many of our listeners will tell us, and I know, and many people know, that the information on, you mentioned the Minsk Accords, then there was the special military operation. We know that Putin kind of laid his cards on the table. He was going to the defense of the Donbass. They didn't want to lose their naval base in the Crimea. There's the long history of Ukraine basically being Russia. There was the peace agreement that was nearly hit on in Istanbul until Boris Johnson turned up. I can't believe that there is ignorance of any of that. Most of us already know that and can lay down the path, yet they can't. Come on.
Yes, if it's not ignorance, then I was being charitable. It's disingenuous. It's just,
well, then they won't stick up then, will they? They won't. They're gutless.
Okay. Yes.
Sorry, I'm lowering my blood pressure here.
I would agree there's a level of cowardice. And then, of course, if someone like myself or other people more esteemed than me raise these questions and maybe arguments, all you get back is President Putin's puppet, or you're following the Chinese line. Not that you're asking for a clear and rational discussion and examination of the facts. And the place for that is the parliament, so that we can follow it. But not one of them yet, as far as I can see. I know there are stirrings in the Labour Party, because clearly what Don Brash and Helen Clark have put to the country, you know, and they should be listened to, not just sidelined. One former prime minister, one almost a prime minister in a 2005 election. Great experience. Okay. Not a matter. We have to agree with them. But the Labour Party has got stirrings. They're really worried. I know that. I can tell your listeners that from my soundings, that under Ardern, under Hipkins, under Little when he was defence minister, they just kept quiet. Just kept quiet. When these moves of sleepwalking to war were taking place. I mean, I'm not the only one. I mean, we all hopefully read history, but I've read an extremely good book called, my wife gave it to me, it's in Dutch, Slaapwandelaars, which means Sleepwalking to War, by the Australian historian Christopher something. And I was going to say Hitchens, but he's dead. Christopher. And Sleepwalking to War. And it's being read by people all around the world, because he details how the alliance is just, no matter what people were doing, they're heading for war. That is what I see at the present time. Maybe wrong. You've got the NATO alliance, and now you've got Russia, China, North Korea, other countries, the BRIC, all those countries of the global majority, not just the global South, but the global majority, saying we don't want to be part of NATO's wars or NATO's, or even Russia or China's. They're saying, hey, we don't want part of it. So there's a building up, and there's an arms race going on. There's a alliances against each other. And so I really believe that members of parliament, well, you said that you don't think that ignorant, but I haven't met one who talks about these things. Anyway.
Because we really need to know which side we're on, don't we? If we're
Well, do we have to choose a side at the stage?
Well, just to know what to do.
Oh, yes. I agree.
You know, and the people, the citizenry needs to know. If there are threats, we need to know who they come from. Are they real? What sort of time frame are we looking at? Are those, and I think they were Airbus A400s, by the way, not C-130s, but anyway, that's a small detail, of those air forces flying over. Yeah, is that just a PR thing, or what does that say? It's like we don't matter.
Well, give another example. Where is the debate in the parliament? I may have missed it. I don't listen to every day. I'd be mad if I did. But on the recent RIMPAC exercises, big military exercises, I see Channel 9 in Australia did a PR job in saying how wonderful it was to be on an aircraft carrier and how these pilots are Top Gun and so forth and so forth. The exercises are aimed at invading North Korea and invading China. Now, people don't have to like North Korea, but still, even on North Korea, I haven't met anybody who's actually done, in the parliament, I mean, done a study of the different aspects of the history, etc. But anyway, RIMPAC. And guess who was invited to RIMPAC? Israel.
Oh, okay.
Now, Israel is in the gun internationally with the International Court of Justice. People got their own views on that as well. But where was the discussion of saying, oh, we're going to take part in a military exercise with a country that has got some a little bit of a criticism for what's happening in Gaza? Not a word, not a thing. So here we are, supposedly in NATO, which brags in its communiques, its belief in democratic values, peaceful means, and they've got Israel. So we can... Which, you know, it's really interesting. So there's a hospital hit in Ukraine. It may be a war crime. It may be an accident. It may be something falling from the Ukrainians. I don't know. I'd like to see an independent investigation. But what did we get? Deadly strike by Russians on a hospital.
Actually, we interviewed a French correspondent about that, who had first-hand knowledge of that about 2 weeks ago. And the direction it came from was a failed intercept missile from Ukraine.
Well, so those types of possibilities and evidence need to be discussed. But when it came to Israel, I looked at the BBC. They didn't say, they had everything in the passive voice. Hospital struck in Gaza, not as though it came from Mars or somewhere. This is the BBC, which is supposed to be.
I think we turned off them ages ago, Matt. Now, the cooperation that is being talked about, NATO and its Indo-Pacific. By the way, does that annoy you, that term Indo-Pacific? It's starting to annoy me.
Oh, yes. All my life, we talk about Asia-Pacific, fair enough. That geographically, that's what it is. Now it's been extended to the Indo-Pacific that we've got to patrol, be worried about. And Indo-Pacific goes right to Africa.
Yeah. And includes India. So our partners, Japan, South Korea, Australia, will launch four new projects to deepen the cooperation. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, who some people think has been kind of running the show because, and that's the other thing, who are we actually working with in the United States? It seems to be, we could easily speculate that there is actually no actual leader that we know about in that administration.
Well, you know, I'm really sympathetic as I get older and older to the question of memory.
Yeah, but who's running the show?
But if you bring the President of the United States about a very crucial issue and he forgets what you've told him, doesn't pass it on, yes, it is wondering who was running the show.
Is it the wife or is it Jake Sullivan? Anyway, the projects will focus on Ukraine, they say, artificial intelligence, disinformation and cybersecurity. And I wonder what they mean. Well, first of all, AI, that's probably going to aid intelligence. But disinformation and cybersecurity, that sends a chill to our audience.
Yes. The linkage, actually start with the question of Japan, South Korea, Australia. They've got their own foreign policies. And now we're linked up to them. We talked about NATO. Australia, we've been at odds with Australia. Australia went to the war in Iraq. New Zealand didn't. Australia had a very close relationship with Suharto's Indonesia and East Timor, and so did we, by the way. But anyway, following Australia is not always a good idea. A lot of people would agree with that. But Japan's got its own agenda too, and so has South Korea. And South Korea, North Korea issues, I followed it closely for many years, particularly in my job as Minister of Disarmament, because I wanted. There was a hopeful period when I was minister. They were cooperating, sunshine policy, same team in the Olympics and other games. You know, I think it was hopeful. Then along came, well, we're splitting from them. We're going to give a hard line. Okay. So South Korea, which at the moment has a president who's universally hated inside Korea and is what he's trying to do. So you're tied up with three other countries, and we're told that, yes, artificial intelligence, we're working with them on this and we're working on that. Those are all parts of a network and meshing going to war.
Mm. I want to get on just real quickly to the Pacific in just a moment, but just to finish off on this, if you were China, if you were China, Rob, how would you view this? And what would you make of us? I know it's a bigger picture than that, but we have this particular relationship with them. They know we're dependent to a certain degree on them. So how would they play this, do you think?
I think they would, first of all, shake their head in sorrow. I'm not particularly worried about our military capacity. They're not particularly worried about any economic power that weight we might throw around. In fact, not worried at all. And then many of their people, not all of them, would probably need to get a map out and realize that New Zealand's not part of Australia. Any New Zealander traveling aboard, we know that insult, oh, you're part of Australia. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is it probably doesn't worry them much at all. But what does worry them is that, or can, what they would think, shake their head perhaps in sorrow, that New Zealand would buy the line that they have to line up against China. And they would see us as having, they could do it. They could do deals with us when Bill Goff and signed the first trade agreement, I think 2008 or something. And there was plenty of criticism blowing between Australia and New Zealand about this or that issue, and ever since. But you know, we had normal relations, and for New Zealand to then say instead of being a country that could be respected for thinking for itself, to join up with the United States, we would just lose respect that we couldn't think for ourselves. In fact, if you think about it, China, with its massive economic weight, its population, is pretty good to us, talk to us as equals. The prime minister was down here, didn't grandstand and say, oh, you're just a little country. I don't really think much. It paid a lot of respect to New Zealand's sovereignty. We don't give it back at the moment, and that's not good, and nor is it sensible.
A quick comment on our Foreign Minister, Winston Peters. He's been in Japan representing us at the 10th Japan-Pacific Islands Leaders Meeting hosted by the Japanese Prime Minister. He delivered a speech titled Pacific Futures, pointing to increasing challenges in the Indo-Pacific. Here we go again. Yep. And the speech was the opportunity to outline our foreign policy shift. He made renewed calls for more diplomacy, more engagement, more compromise, particularly in New Caledonia. We have to front up with money, really, to make that meaningful, don't we? I mean, here are the Chinese in building infrastructure and leaving, you know, and there may be strings attached, but meaningful, you know, material items that that can possibly improve people's lives, highways, airports, etc. We'd have to match or better that, wouldn't we, if we really wanted to engage back?
Yes. Well, New Zealand on its own, of course, can't match what China's got available. And we do have projects in the Pacific. And one of my jobs, you might remember, was Minister of Development Aid. Mostly we threw it into useless things like sending bureaucrats from these islands to big conferences where they went shopping. I'm serious. I went to a conference and I knew the person we paid for and his wife only emerged with big shopping bags. I never saw them on the conference floor over in Senegal and so forth. And we've tied it. One of the things I was very proud of that was to develop an independent agency for aid and to measure, did it do any good? That's been taken back under Foreign Affairs, and now aid is back to be used as a leverage for this or for that, for bribery. We could do what the Cubans do, which is, and we have a deal with the Cubans, it's very good. They train the doctors in Cuba from the Pacific Islands who come back as doctors, Tonga. They've got a high regard. No military trade-off, nothing else. They use their resources if they can, and New Zealand helps to give money to pay for that, and other countries as well. They can train doctors and engineers and other people using limited resources. So we can be innovative, and we can work with all of these countries on and it's better. We'll get more respect if they don't see us part of the game plan of the United States and the European Union. Because when France gives money, it's to shore up its position in Kaneki, in Tahiti. And by the way, where's our discussion? Talk about the Chinese in the Pacific. France's got this floating aircraft carrier, massive military bases in Polynesia. I haven't seen any articles accusing them of being aggressive and being out into the Pacific. China's at least got the excuse that it's in the Pacific. What's France's excuse? None. But it's a valuable ally for the United States and for the United Kingdom. And now these other countries that are flying their airplanes over New Zealand apparently discovered an interest. Maybe Spain wants to get back the Philippines. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. It's been interesting catching up with you again, Matt Robson. Thanks for coming back on. Let's see what happens. It's a crazy world right now.
It has been since I was born. So we keep going, you know.
Yeah, right. Thanks for coming on RCR anyway.
Not that I'm to blame for being born.
No, we won't hold you responsible. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.